sounds like you're a lot like me. Like, I try and keep a Google Doc of shows, and I update it and then forget about it for like 8 weeks.
Oh, that already happened. Okay. Yeah. Whoops.
Yeah. I'm kind of at the point with shows. Like, I've been to a lot and I enjoy it and I enjoy them now, but I'm like, I want to be very targeted and specific.
I haven't been to anything since COVID. I think the next show I go to is going to be at Red Rocks, though. Go to one that's outside and in one of the best concert venues in the country. I think it'd be pretty cool. So that's my next. I think next summer Chicago is playing at Red Rocks. So there we go. That might be the one.
That's going to be, that's going to sound so nice there. I definitely haven't been to anything since COVID. I've had three so far that have come to Salt Lake City where I'm like, this is going to be the one. And then I just... Nah, that's not the one.
Not feeling it.
Yeah, I almost went to Wilco and Slater Kenny like right after I moved here, but then I was like, yeah, I've seen them both.
That does sound like a fun show, though. I'd go to that.
Yeah.
Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, speaking of Wilco, just turned 20 this year.
Ooh.
Think about that.
You know, we were talking about the Clear Channel 9/11 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure, I don't know if they changed the album, like if they took it off, but I know like Ashes of an American Flag, or Ashes of the American Flag, it was banned after 9/11.
That was a strange time to be alive.
Yeah.
It was a real strange time to be alive. Not that it's not strange now, but I think that's the beginning of strangeness for me, because I was old enough now that things that happened in the world impacted me in a significant way. And I was like, weird times.
Yeah. And I feel like you really could see just like kind of the pivot and change of everything, of just this hardcore zealotry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah,
like, we really got in deep there. I was going to start talking, man. We were going to start talking about the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand was going to be my next thought. It's kind of the same thing, like a pivot, like the world changed. Boom, everything's different.
Yeah, and I feel like you said, like I was old enough to really see it and start grasping these kind of bizarre extremes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Heavy, man. What do you... You got a little tune for us? Is it a pleasant, happy tune for us today?
Yeah, a little upbeat.
Lay it on me.
Comb this town from top to bottom. Try to get around, but our legs are broken. Every time we miss it, because we ain't got a ticket. Do, 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 do. 48 eps need 48. 48 eps need 48. 48 eps need 48. Thrills, the 48 thrills, cheap thrills, any kind of thrill. That was The Clash's 48 Hours.
Nice. I was trying to figure it out. I apologize. I couldn't, but I got it.
Yeah. It was on their self-titled one. I kind of forgot the beat rhythm there for a while, too.
I think you nailed it, having no idea what the actual song sounds like. I think you crushed it.
I'll settle for that.
Lovely. Episode 48. Look at that.
Yeah, man. We crossed the Rubicon a long time ago.
Down to the nitty gritty.
Yeah. To say the least. It's getting interesting, but somehow you're still coming up with stuff to talk about and coming up with ideas. So what are we doing today?
This is an easy one, because all it is we're talking about male solo artists today. So there are a few of those in my collection. We've actually talked about quite a few, but here are six more of them. Also, a couple albums that I've been trying to kind of fit in different places that never quite worked out, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm actually looking forward to talking about some of these. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of perfect in its own way. Still worked out.
Definitely quite a variety, a lot of mix here.
Yeah, that I feel like these last couple weeks and then going into these last few weeks, their variety is an understatement.
We're almost back to the week of the albums that I bought because I like the way the cover looked for variety.
It's kind of funny that we knocked that one out so early thinking that we would run out of ideas. Still hasn't happened.
We're almost there too. I'm gonna try. I don't know. Last episode might just be. I might have to find like 10 degrees of separation. What these albums have in common, but
we'll I think see. We can find some threads. Yeah, we'll be talking about the solo today. Solo, you can't hear us.
We got a bonus album this week too. So we're kicking it off.
Oh,
here.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that.
Actually, kind of did seven this week.
Yeah.
So we're kicking it off with an album I have called Truth Beckola by Jeff Beck. Basically, what this is Jeff Beck's debut and second album, which has been sold as a double LP. So that's what it is.
Okay, I was going to ask how this was packaged because I guess they came out in different years. I'm guessing they were bundled together when you bought them. Are they in the same sleeve? How does this work?
Yes. So they're in the same sleeve.
Huh.
Inset kind of in the upper right hand corner is the cover of Truth.
Okay.
And then the actual album itself is the cover of the second album, which is Beckola, which is a big apple. So it's kind of a hybridized cover here. It also on the cover says Jeff Beck, Ronnie Wood, Rod Stewart together. So they're really hyping. These are the only two Jeff Beck albums that have Ronnie Wood and Rod Stewart on them. So
this must have come out. Which I was pretty pleased with.
Yeah, that must have come out after they split up, though, because why else would you hype them?
Yeah, sure, that's a good point. Yeah, that's pretty cool, though. I was definitely confused and wondering what was going on. Yeah, like, I went into this knowing that might be a unique experience, because the last thing we listened to was a little different. It was a pretty good time. Yeah, some similarities, some differences between the two. I enjoyed this little combo.
Let's just do them as albums here real quick. So
yeah.
Truth came out, that's the debut, came out in July 29, 1968 on Columbia. And it debut, we've got the Jeff Beck group. So that is Rod Stewart, Ronnie Wood, and on the drums is a fellow named Mickey Waller. So some all-stars, kind of an all-star crew here coming at you.
I'll tell you, man, when the first song started and I heard Rod, I was like, is that my man Rod? What are you doing sneaking on here?
I'm not always a Rod Stewart fan all the time, but he was fantastic on both of these albums. It was really, really good stuff. And so was Ron Wood, actually. The rhythm section on both of these was fantastic. I wonder why they why it's Jeff Beck or Jeff Beck Band, because these are all really good.
Yeah, I wonder kind of how that worked. Like maybe Jeff wrote some of these songs and then brought these dudes in or what.
I think so. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we got a couple covers on here. We got some stuff from the Yardbirds when Jeff Beck was in the Yardbirds. So it is kind of stuff he's kind of brought along with him. So I'm guessing that's probably what it is.
Yeah.
What are your standout tracks here?
Honestly, starting things off, Shapes of Things. I love the intro of the song. Really gritty, really rough, kind of raw and sloppy. And like you said, dude, that rhythm section was really gnarly, almost creamian.
Mm-hmm. This is a Yardbirds song, and they slowed it down a little bit, made it a little heavier. This whole thing was a lot heavier than I kind of expected. It's funny, I got to researching this. I don't know. We've already done a Jeff Beck album, and I think I mentioned at the time, I'm not like a super Jeff Beck fan. I'm not real into it. But looking into this, a lot of people started referring to this as like early heavy metal, that kind of thing. And I agree, like it's very hard rock heavy metal here.
Yeah, that's absolutely how I felt, especially just like it felt like the longer it went on, the heavier it kind of got. But yeah, it's. I'm glad you mentioned Ron Wood or Ronnie Wood, because on the next track, Let Me Love You, I'm like, okay, this is just kind of, you know, UK white dudes doing jangly blues rock. But then I thought, man, that's a great Ronnie Wood guitar sound. And then I looked it up and saw that Ronnie Wood was on the bass, which threw me off.
Dude, it is a fantastic bass. In fact, I have a specific note on the bass for that song. It was just a really, really heavy riff, man. And there's a lot of cool riffs in this.
Yeah, I was blown away. And apparently he hated playing bass, but he just like did it anyway for him. But
he did it for two albums. Maybe that's part of the reason they split up. Got tired of playing bass.
And then he ran off and started the Faces with Rod Stewart.
Yep. Morning Dew, anything on that one?
Not much. I mean, it was solid, but...
Reminds me of a knockoff brand Mountain Dew, like a store-bought Mountain Dew. Get your Morning Dew.
Yeah, like telling your kids, why pay full price for Mountain Dew when we can get Morning Dew for half the cost?
Exactly. There's a Mountain Lightning over there as well. There's a Grateful Dead version of that song. I kind of would like to hear it. I will say this. When we're done with this podcast, that's one type of album I'm buying. I'm going to buy American Beauty, Grateful Dead.
I got it a couple months ago, and I'm telling you.
It's one of the first ones I'm going to pick up.
Dude, that thing is awesome. I need to pick up Working Man's Dead next. I tested with American Beauty, and I was like, you know what? I think I need me a second one now.
Jumping in with both feet. Next thing you know, you'll be on tour with Bill Walton. Let's see. I do have a note on the next one, You Shook Me. So that's a Muddy Waters song. So on the back of my album, it's kind of like the Leo Kottke albums where there's like a little something next to the text. So this is a cover of a Muddy Waters song. And next to the song title, it says... Probably the rudest sounds ever recorded, intended for listening whilst angry or stoned. Last note of this song is my guitar being sick. Well, so would you be if I smashed your guts for 2 minutes and 28 seconds. So he is like saying, I just ripped the guitar up on this one. He really does. It's a pretty cool tune.
Yeah, I actually noted, like, it's actually kind of a solid Muddy Waters take, and I'd love to know what the label thought of that little subtext.
I gotta say, too, on that one and the next one, Rod Stewart is the standout to me. Especially Old Man River, dude. He crushes it on that song.
I was just kind of amazed that they covered this. I just kept thinking, what an interesting song to cover. What an interesting song to cover. But it's really soulful and respectful.
It is. Take a song from 1927 and take it and... Mm-hmm. Put your own spin on it. By the way, John Paul Jones played bass on that one.
Wow. I guess Ronnie needed a break.
Took a break, yeah. Let's see. B-side, what do you got on the B-side?
Greensleeves. I was just like, what? What?
That's not the first Greensleeves we've heard. We did another Greensleeves. I can't remember who it was. Was it Emerson Lincoln Palmer or somebody? Somebody else.
I think it was. I'm almost positive. Yep.
It was nice, though. Nice little acoustic Greensleeves.
Yeah. I was like, you know what? Why not? We're deep at this point. Now, Rock My Plimsoll. So sludgy. I can't even imagine how many bands this influenced. It sounded like proto-everything Zeppelin.
That's hilarious you mentioned that. Because, first of all, I agree. Secondly, I don't want to blow past Rock My Plimsoll. It's a great song. But the next song, Beck's Bolero. Mm-hmm. Is actually credited to Jimmy Page having written it. So you're right. Early Led Zeppelin is right in the wheelhouse. They first recorded it in 1966. They'd had a little recording session of a group of musicians that included Jimmy Page, Keith Moon, John Paul Jones, and Nicky Hopkins. And that's where they put together Beck's Bolero. So that's who's playing on this song here.
It makes sense that Jimmy Page was involved because it's... I mean, it's kind of early prog and heavy metal adjacent.
Mm-hmm.
It's, man, when it lets itself go, it's killer.
And that's not to take away from Jeff Beck, because a lot of the stuff on here is the same vein. We're not saying Jimmy Page is the only reason this is proto Zeppelin. It's the, all those influences. It's really cool to hear.
Yeah. You got anything else?
Not really. I mean, the last couple were good. Blues Deluxe was great.
Yeah.
And I Ain't Superstitious was solid too.
Yeah, I don't have much, but I'm with you. Just good stuff.
Let's move into the next one then. Beck Ola, his second studio album. We can kind of fly through this one. This one came out in 1969. It's the last one with Ronnie Wood and Rod Stewart. What have you to say about this one?
I love the album title. It's just so ridiculous. Beck Ola.
Yeah, I try to figure out what that means. I don't have any idea what it means.
And then just to like add to the absurdity, like a cover of All Shook Up. It's pretty loose and sauntering, but I was kind of dancing while cooking listening to this.
We got two Elvis covers on the A side. Pretty crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Jailhouse Rock's also on there.
Yeah, I forgot about that, but that's the one where Nicky Hopkins is just, man, beating that piano to death. Dude rules. We've talked about Nicky Hopkins a little bit on here, and man, he's awesome. Yeah,
they really funk it up a little bit, and it's definitely heavier, obviously, than Elvis's version. Actually, speaking of Nicky Hopkins, track three, Girl from Mill Valley, he wrote that one, and it is a really lovely, slow piano tune. Got a little organ in there. It's really, really lovely song. That's an instrumental. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I said that it was just, you know, very, very beautiful piano instrumental rocker.
Let's see, B-side?
Hangman's Knee? Is that what it was?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Hangman's Knee. Heavy, again, sludgy, jaunty. Wild song lyrically and musically. Like an oddly good time about trying to not be executed.
I'm with you, man. If you're talking about, like, the foundations of hard rock and heavy metal music, and you're not taking Jeff Beck or the Jeff Beck group, like, into consideration when you're thinking about that, I think you're doing yourself a disservice, because this is harder and heavier than I anticipated. Both of these albums were.
It was pioneering, without a doubt.
And I had no idea. I mean, like I said, not a huge Jeff Beck fan, and going into this podcast, I'm glad we did these, because it really opened my eyes to what he could do.
Absolutely, man. I'm with you. Yeah, kind of my final thought on both of them is that I gained a new respect for him as a leader in this genre.
Very glad I own this. It was a gift from my buddy Joe. So thank you, Joe, for this. He gave me this and the Angel album we listened to. If you remember Angel.
Yeah. Okay, that's quite the combo.
We got him at a... like in the basement of a coffee shop in Salina, Kansas. Picked him up.
Ooh, okay.
Gave him to me for Christmas one year. Yeah, it's pretty cool of him.
Nice.
So, thank you, Joe. All right. Got that one out of the way. I figured we'd get the double out of the way right off the bat so we can move on here. Next up, we've got All American Boy. That is the debut studio album from Rick Derringer. It came out in October 1973 on Blue Sky Records. This baby was recorded up in Nederland, Colorado, Caribou Ranch.
Okay. Man, this cover makes me LOL.
It's pretty great. Is he playing guitar with gloves on? Because I don't even think that's possible.
That was kind of my first thought. I was like, why is he wearing gloves? And then it looks like his head is like superimposed.
Mm-hmm. Like somebody else's body?
Yeah. It's a hoot, man.
Look at his, you can barely see him, but look at his pants. He's got like tiger stripe leather pants, or just red leather pants, maybe.
All right, let me.
Pretty slick.
Real quick.
Mm-hmm. Slick Rick. While you're doing that, who is Rick Derringer? Pretty good, huh? Who is Rick Derringer? So Rick Derringer founded the band The McCoys and has worked extensively with people like Edgar and Johnny Winter. He's also worked with Steely Dan, Cyndi Lauper, and Weird Al Yankovic.
Were the McCoys Hang on Sloopy?
Yes.
Dude.
I believe so.
That just blew my mind. I can't believe this dude was also a part of Hang on Sloopy.
I think he was. I know he was in the McCoys. Now, if the McCoys are the ones that did Hang on Sloopy, then yeah, he was a part of it. Good old Rick Derringer. So I mentioned he worked with Weird Al. He played the guitar on Eat It.
I've got another really fun fact. So I didn't know much about Rick Derringer other than Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, and he wrote Hulk Hogan's intro music for Real American.
That is correct. In fact, Rick Derringer, he produced the wrestling album 1985 and the follow-up.
Wow, he produced the whole freaking album.
Yes, he also produced Piledriver, the wrestling album 2, which came out in 1987.
Dude, that thing is a goldmine of insanity. Like, I can't imagine how ridiculous recording that was. And whoever had that idea, brilliant. Did you know Hulk Hogan is a bassist?
No.
Yeah.
Glad to know it.
He apparently played in a bunch of Florida bands, like small local bands, before giving wrestling a shot.
Terry Bollea as a bass player.
And you know what? I can picture it.
Oh, totally. Like sitting there with like a big frown on his face, a big meaty human being slapping the bass. Absolutely. That's what instrument I would have guessed he could play if you asked me what instrument can he play.
Oh, man.
Anyway, so Rick's had his hands in a lot of different things. We'll just say that. So, but beyond that, honestly, I didn't know what to expect going in here. So kicking it off with Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, definitely his most famous tune. Mm-hmm. Although not originally recorded by him, Johnny Winter had a version of this previously.
That makes sense. It's such like a Winter Brothers tone.
Totally.
Yeah.
It totally is. But Rick's was significantly more popular. So what do you think of Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo? I'm a fan.
Yeah, if someone said, name 10 songs Rock 105 played when you were growing up, this would absolutely get a mention. It's just quintessential classic rock. Like, I wouldn't call it great, but it's definitely a classic.
It's pretty much exactly what I wrote. I have a song that is very representative of the music and time period in which it was created. That doesn't mean it bad. I know it means it dates itself a little bit, and it does, but it definitely sounds like the good classic rock at the very least.
And like every time I hear it, I sing the instrument parts. Like
and Rick's playing every instrument other than the drums on that one. Ooh. So he's lighting it up. I'll say one thing. I mean, he's a guitar player, but some of his bass riffs on this album are really freaking good.
Dang. I had no idea he went all multi-instrumental like that. Okay.
Yeah, he's playing the bass on the vast majority of these. Let's see, anything else to say about Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo before we move along here?
No.
Anything to say about the next couple of songs then?
Joyride, like I actually didn't know this was from him. I always called it the TV theme song because I felt like that's what it sounded like to me. And I feel like it's always coupled with the next song, Teenage Queen, when it is on the radio.
This Joyride and Teenage Queen, the backup musicians on those two songs are shared. And actually, maybe a couple more between this album and the next album we're going to talk about, which was also recorded up in Netherlands. So we'll talk about that. I just think it's interesting. So Teenage Queen, you've got Joe Walsh playing the rhythm guitar on that one.
Dang. Okay. Joe Walsh, man, he was really making the rounds.
I think he was just hanging out up in Netherland, Colorado when anyone came up there. Hey, you need any help?
He just kind of saunters in with a guitar over his shoulder, and people are like, oh, fuck, here's Joe again.
What'd you think of track 4 then, Cheap Tequila?
If speaking of Joe Walsh, if someone told me this was written by the Eagles, I wouldn't have second-guessed them.
Absolutely. This is another one, though, that Rick is playing a crap load of instruments. He's credited with the pedal steel, acoustic, bass, tambourine, lead vocals, and lead guitar. I wish I was that talented that I could... I wish I had the talent, the know-how, and the equipment to, like, jam with myself. I'm going to record a bass line, then I'm going to record a guitar over it, and I'm going to play some drums. And like, I don't have any of that. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, like, figuring out how to track everything differently and, like, how to... like play something here and be like, okay, this is what the rhythm should be like to this, or yeah.
What else you got? Anything else on the A side, or you got some B side standouts?
Is Hold on the A side?
I think it's the last song on the A side, yes.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting that Patti Smith co-wrote that 2 years before her debut came out. Like, she's just a songwriter I never associate with this kind of music, so.
Yeah, that was a cool, soulful duet with Edgar Winter on the piano. So he's guested on this bad boy a couple times.
Dang. Just a revolving door there.
Okay, so then how about B-side? What do you got?
I don't have too much. I have some like general notes, but what about you?
The first track, The Airport Giveth, The Airport Taketh Away. I really actually got some Warren Zevon vibes from that. Like, you had some Edgar Winter once again ripping it up on the keys. Kind of some funny lyrics. At least a funny idea anyway. There's a string arrangement, some backup singers, just had some Zevon vibes to me.
Yeah, I can totally hear that. Even honestly, even the album title gives me Zevon vibes.
All yes. Well, and even The Airport Giveth, The Airport Taketh Away is kind of Zevon-y too.
Yeah.
Time Warp, I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. Hand drums were really, really cooking on that thing.
Yeah, Rick is playing acoustic, electric guitar, the electric sitar, the bass, the tambourine, the maracas. And then he brought Edgar Winter in to play the organ. So that was almost like a little bit less jazzy dregs to me, Dixie Dregs.
Yeah, yeah. I can hear that.
I got notes on all these songs, so we don't have to talk about them all. I enjoyed this album. We'll just say that. Slide on over Slinky was great. Right before the chorus hits, he yells out, "Get a little greasy," which I think is absolutely a perfect thing to yell. Sweet little bass groove on that one. Rick on the bass again, just tearing it up. Good song.
Yeah, that's kind of a great way to introduce things. I kind of wish that was my catchphrase now.
Get a little greasy.
Get a little greasy, guys. Let's go.
That's a term we say in disc golf when a disc is headed to a thick tree.
So
we say get greasy, meaning hopefully the disc kind of somehow slides through there. So it is a term we use in the disc golf community.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
It is. I said it tonight to one of my discs. It did not get greasy.
The opposite of greasy.
Mm-mm. Whack. All right. Anyway, okay, I do have to talk about the last track. So Jump, Jump, Jump. The first lyrics in that song, I'm thinking of jumping off a bridge because life has gotten down. Can't think of one reason to live. I guess I'll probably drown. I think I might as well jump, jump, jump. It's a melancholy, dark tune about jumping off a bridge.
It's so heavy that, I don't know, I don't want to say it's out of place, but I mean, it's weird compared to, like, you start off with, like, hope y'all know what I'm talking about. Yeah, and then it ends with, like, jumping off a freaking bridge. And honestly, it made me wonder, like, I remember you mentioning David Lee Roth here, and, like, supposedly he wrote Jump because, oh, I saw this story of a guy, and I was like, what if he jumped? And I was like, are you sure you just didn't knock off Rick Derringer?
Yeah, no kidding. Like, what a thought process writing a song. Yikes. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, had some, like you said, felt out of place, but in a kind of a good way. It felt more modern than the rest of the album. It didn't feel like maybe as dated. They tossed a little saxophone in there right when I wanted it.
Yeah.
Just a good track to go out on. I thought that was a great closer.
For sure.
What are your final thoughts here on Rick?
I mean, it was good. It was definitely better than I could have expected and hoped for. A little disjointed at times, but whatever. It was good.
Yeah. Not super familiar with Rick Derringer's entire catalog, but there's a lot more to it than rock and roll Hoochie Coo. I enjoyed most of this album.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Number three, four, sort of, but three. John Mellencamp. Uh-huh. This is the first album with his real last name on it. Seventh studio album overall, but the first one he did as John Mellencamp instead of Johnny Cougar. Came out October 23rd, 1983 on Riva Records.
Is Riva still around?
I don't know. This might be the first and only one we've had on Riva Records. Yeah. I don't know Riva Records.
No, yeah, and for an album this kind of big, it's interesting that...
Pick this baby up for $1 at the Princeton Sound Exchange in Princeton, New Jersey, I believe is the name of that record store.
Okay. How's
Princeton
it play?
Record Exchange. It's fantastic.
Ooh.
It actually looks really good, too. Now,
ooh, wow.
Talk about a weird album cover. Very. Is he airbrushed on there? What is going on with this album cover, dude?
I couldn't tell if they did that effect where they... Like, you have a picture, and then you kind of do the, like a lithograph on top of the picture, and they, like, outline and then do, like, a cartoon over the real body. I couldn't tell what was going on.
He looks like well, the top half of him looks like an anime character.
He's got some skinny legs.
Like, he should be holding, like, a giant sword in hairstyle. But, I don't know, dude. He's looking very interesting.
Looks like he's picking a wedgie.
Yeah, he does. And
or like holding his britches up.
I don't understand the stance. I really don't. I like the angels around his head, though. Anyway, let's talk about this album. How familiar are you with John Mellencamp? This is my only John Mellencamp album.
Familiar enough. Like, I definitely don't think he's bad. I think he's got some really solid stuff.
I'm not going to put him up into the favorites at all, but I will say I had a great time listening to this album.
Yeah. It was, I think, better than I had originally anticipated. Especially like the first, probably the first three or four, especially. The ace house is pretty dang strong.
Yeah, kicks off with Crumbling Down. This was written with his longtime writing partner, George Green, same guy that did Hurt So Good. And it's got some very Hurt So Good vibes to it, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, Hurt So Good part two.
I mean, it's a interesting song lyrically. He's talking about the United States crumbling. You know, he's a very progressive person. So he's, you know, Reagan was president at the time. He's deregulating things and things are crumbling down on top of the poor. And that's what this song is about. And actually Pink Houses, the next song is well.
Yeah. I was going to mention that the second one has as strong messages in songwriting that, I mean, I can get behind.
It's almost some Bruce Springsteen vibes to writing and actually music to a lot of these things. I mean,
for sure.
But totally on board with both of those. People are going to know those. Those have been, Pink Houses in particular, has been co-opted. It's one of those, they hear the song and they get the opposite message.
Yeah. How you can hear that and think the opposite is beyond me, but here we are.
Yep. What other specific notes do you have?
I really like Authority song. This is another one that people probably know. It's just, the guitar is so dang catchy. The claps. One just to get everyone singing and involved. Like, it's just a fun anti-Authority song.
Yeah, it's like a Heartland rock version of I Fought the Law, basically.
Yeah.
That's what it is to me. Like, I love the guitar in all of these. It's just, like you said, like kind of a Heartland rock. We almost did a Heartland rock week.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't quite have enough pieces left to put it together, but yeah, I just like the entire vibes of Heartland for rock.
Yeah.
What else you got?
I thought Jackie O was neat because it was co-written by John Prine.
Absolutely seems like a John Prine song too. Can your daddy get us backstage passes? You know that we love to dance. Can your daddy get us backstage passes with all his political power? With all his political power, it seems to me like you could dance better than you do. First time I heard that, I laughed a lot. Like,
it's hilarious. Classic. Yeah, classic Prine songwriting, man.
Anything else? I didn't have a ton on the B-side.
Serious Business wasn't bad. I loved Loving Mother Phobia. Because, well, I don't know if I necessarily love the song, but I love the opening part. Did you catch that?
Yeah. Okay, tell me if you heard the same thing that I did. So somebody starts playing the drums prematurely, and then Mellencamp says, "Hey, what the fuck?"
Yeah, that's... I scrubbed it back a few times. I'm like, is that what he said? And yeah, it's pretty freaking funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious. And then they get into it. It's a good little Heartland boogie rocker. I like that one too.
Yeah.
I actually, Play Guitar was pretty solid too. I honestly, this whole thing was really, really good. I enjoyed the vast majority of this album. I don't have any notes beyond Golden Gates, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Not a bad album at all. Pretty dang good, even in my opinion. It's solid rock.
For a buck? Come on.
Dude, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely get your money's worth and then some.
Let's keep on trucking here. Next up, we've got Dan Fogelberg again. This is the final Fogelberg installment on this podcast. I think this is our third or fourth Fogelberg.
Yeah.
This one came out May 1977 on the same Full Moon label the rest of them have. This one was recorded up in Nederland, Colorado, and it is Dan Fogelberg's fourth album.
We're off to Netherlands.
So that's a play on Nederland, Colorado, if you hadn't guessed that. That's why I named that. Because that's where it was recorded.
Man, Joe Walsh sleeping in the studio. Joe, get out of here. Dan Fogelberg's coming in.
I misspoke when I said the next one when we were talking Rick Derringer. So the Rick Derringer album and this album share a lot of guest musicians.
Okay.
Which is interesting because it's really not the same kind of music.
Not at all. Yeah.
So let's take a trip into some soft rock here. What'd you think of Netherlands?
I liked it more than the last Dan Fogelberg solo we listened to, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the opening song is just so interesting to me because it's just really sad starting out, you know? Like, there's just a heavy heartedness to it.
Which is tough to do when you're singing falsetto. I agree totally, but it is kind of tough to be heavy-handed when you're doing falsetto. It was cool. There's a little flute in there, some orchestral arrangements, some piano. This album was recorded really, really well. It sounds really, really good.
Nice. I'm glad you mentioned the orchestral stuff, because I thought it was downright moving when he wasn't falsettoing all over it. I mean, the version that I listened to digitally sounded great, so I imagine the actual vinyl was real nice.
It's in good condition, too. This one's in really good shape, so I was happy with that. Once Upon a Time, anything on that one? Kind of Eaglesy?
Yeah, dude, exactly. I said it's very Eagles-esque.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty soft. Not super soft, but pretty soft. Kind of sounds like maybe Firefall as well. Remember the Firefall album we listened to?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What else you got? Anything else on the A side? I don't have a ton of notes here.
Loose Ends. I thought it was pretty original and thoughtful. And how it was constructed. It seemed really different. Like Electric Darkness with guitars had a little message to it. The organ was cool. Like it didn't fit in because it was just, I don't know, to me, so unique and very well done.
Dude, that's my song of the week.
Mm.
No joke.
Okay.
I absolutely loved Loose Ends. So you've got everything you mentioned is kind of, you hit the nail on the head. You got Don Henley and J.D. Souther with some backup vocals. You got Dan hammering away on the piano. Some cool guitar in there. It's Joe Walsh on the guitar. They woke him up for this one, had him play. You got the
he really on guitar?
Yes, no kidding. It was Joe Walsh. So you got the organ screaming away. I mean, it is, again, recorded exceptionally well. This sounds fantastic. So I was in.
Yeah, dude, to me, it felt like the one song where they just went all in on and like put so much focus into that maybe other tracks didn't get that craft and attention, but they put it all into this and it paid off.
Same drummer from the Rick Derringer album, too, on Loose Ends.
Jeez.
Joe Vitale. So those dudes must have just been... I'm serious. I think there was a group of studio musicians just living up there in Netherlands. Just, hey, we need somebody to come up here and play bass and whatever.
Just waiting for the phone to ring.
Yep. Good for them. There's worse ways to make a living. The only other thing I will had to say on this album, honestly, B-side, Give Me Some Time. Our old buddy Tim Weisberg drops by to lay a little flute down.
Ooh, baby. I was wondering if that was Tim sneaking around in there.
Mm-hmm. He swung by to lay it down for us.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I don't have too much more. Like, False Faces had that pretty fun tuba, but other than that...
Didn't blow me away. It's solid. I thought Scarecrow's Dream was pretty good, too. But just pretty okay. I mean, the whole album's pretty okay, but we'll say Loose Ends in particular stood out to me in a big way. I really enjoyed that, too.
Yeah, for sure. There were some wild inconsistencies. I do think it was better than the last one. You know, some nice moments peppered throughout.
Peppered.
What was their song?
Pepper?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Don't say their song to me. I owned a couple Pepper albums. So.
What was the biggest Pepper hit?
They've got more than one song, bro.
That's gonna drive me nuts now. Like their big, big hit.
I'm trying to think of what the would it be like Stone Love?
Probably.
You know, like Stormtrooper. I'm thinking of off of the album Kona Town. That's the one I own.
Mm-hmm.
Leave me alone. Pepper's still one of those bands that like okay, let me just, we're going to go off on a little tangent here real quick. I'm sorry. When you're playing disc golf, people like to play music when they're playing disc golf. And okay. I'll just say my musical taste generally does not fall in line with the average disc golfer out there in the world. Generally. No offense to them. I'm just not into like white guy reggae most of the time. But I can put Pepper on and people are like, okay, cool. Yeah. So I still put Pepper on occasionally.
Yeah, kind of that nice balance where the two worlds collide. You give one step, somebody else comes near it. Yep.
Freaking Pepper. What's next? All right, we got Kyle. All right, so next up we've got a solo album from the lead guitarist from the band The Sword. We've got Kyle Schutz. eponymous debut album here. This album's kind of interesting. So first of all, it's green. The actual vinyl itself is kind of cool. But this thing was crowdfunded on Kickstarter.
Nice.
So I sat down to listen to this last night, pulled out the album sleeve, and started reading it, and I saw my name on there. And I had completely and utterly forgotten that I had contributed to this album. But I gave enough money that my name is in the liner notes of this vinyl.
It's pretty awesome, dude. And I was going to ask if you had to like give a certain amount to get on there, but
I did.
I'm assuming it's like in alphabetical order, but where your name is like right at eye contact. Like yes. Right. It was, oh man, when you sent me that picture, I laughed so hard.
It's even better because I totally forgot. Like I had, I had no idea until I put it on last night and started reading through it, and I was like, wait, that's my name.
Wait a second, who's this guy on this?
My buddy Joe's on here too. The same Joe that gave me the Jeff Beck album we already talked about. He's on here too.
Angel Joe, is that what I start calling him?
Yep. So he's my heavy metal show companion. Anytime we go to like a metal show, he's always up for it. So
nice. Now, surprise. Did Kyle Shett do like most of the instruments, all the instruments, some of the instruments on this?
All of them, from what I could gather. Yeah. So I think he may. I mean, I couldn't get any information that anyone else guessed it on this. And on the back, it says produced, composed, arranged, and performed by Kyle Shett. So he did it all himself.
Okay. That makes sense. Nice. Yeah. I feel like you can kind of tell that, not in a bad way, but in that it was one dude who, like, worked hard to engineer and make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, a crowdfunded album is kind of interesting. I don't think I've ever, I'm sure they exist, but it's the first one I've ever contributed to. I had to create a Kickstarter account just to contribute to this. It's the only one I've ever donated to, but here we are.
Awesome.
Yeah, I was a really big fan of The Sword at the time, like super into him. I was like, oh, Kyle's breaking out on his own. They were on indefinite hiatus.
Okay.
At the time. So I was like, okay, he's doing something. Fair I'll enough, throw a little cash his way. I probably would have spent that money on going to a Sword show this year anyway. So
yeah, nice.
So let's talk about what my money bought me. What did you think of Kyle Shett here?
I dug it, man. Like, it's just such good rock and roll. Like, every time I have so many notes, it's like good time. Just like hanging out, party, good time.
I like that I can kind of see all of his different influences. Because there are punk rock songs on here, there's a doomier vibe songs, there's some desert stoner rock stuff going on. So it's a wide variety of Kyle's influences, and I think it's really interesting to see.
Totally, man. Like, big city, huge throwback sound. Got some fuzz, got some electronic going on.
Big old fuzzy, like a Caius riff almost. Like, pretty cool.
Yeah. What'd you think of the next song?
I liked I Can't Dance. Like, a hard driving rocker. I really love the chorus on that one. Just like, I can't dance, but baby, I don't care. Take my hand. You won't be needing that chair. We're going out on the dance floor. Let's go. Like, I'm totally down for that.
Man, such a sentiment I can get behind.
Yeah, and I suck at dancing, but I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah. Hey, I'm out. I might as well have a good time. The song kind of reminded me of the Black Keys and Monster Magnet had a baby, and I was there for it, man.
Totally. I could totally hear that. I was thinking almost like some Jack White vibes to some of this stuff, too. But that's almost along the same vein as some Black Keys stuff. So, yeah, I'm with you there, totally. What else you got? Any what's Set You All on Fire? Tough to describe. A little Queens of the Stone Age-y to me on that one.
Yeah, kind of bare beat. Yeah, a little bare bones, like him and a drum machine, essentially, just going at it with some backing vocals.
And then the next one was like a doom track, Awake. Yeah. Big old doom bells ringing, like just awesome.
Yeah, dark and sludgy and doomy is what I said.
Kind of some haunting vocals, too. Mm-hmm. Anything else on the B side? How about any of the, I don't have a ton of notes on the B side.
We Still Smoke was like kind of good meat and potatoes rock, but I'll tell you which one I really liked was Barcelona.
I did too. I liked that one a ton, and I took no notes because I was totally focused on listening to the song, but I remember enjoying it a heck of a lot.
I was just thinking, I don't know how he did it, but this is Thin Lizzy meets pop punk. Like, it's a short track, great solo squeezed in, like a weekend night rock and roller. Great, great tune. Almost my song of the week.
Nice, dude. I'm glad to hear it. Kyle with some surprises for us this week.
Yeah.
The only other real big note I had, No Reply, was almost like a country track to go out on, like a little acoustic there. I loved it. A little country solo.
Yeah. I one thing about this whole album, this is probably my final thought on it, is that it musically, you might say, oh, this doesn't connect. Like, there's no thread. And like, there's so many different styles kind of weaved in, but it works and it does connect so well. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I approached it from the vein of, I know what he is all about in The Sword. I've been listening to The Sword forever. So I was kind of glad that he did the variety of different sounds and influences and things, because I want to see what makes Kyle tick. And I'm, you know, we've compared a lot of these songs to a lot of other different artists. I don't think unfairly. It's just, I think it's interesting to see all the different things that probably influenced him.
Yeah, man, I'm with you. I think it's kind of cool when an artist goes solo. And I feel like a lot of times in indie music, you see artists go solo or they do a side project, and it kind of sounds like what they're already doing or the band they're in. And I'm like, what? Why not just do this with the band you're in? But this, it had some Sword connections, but it was like, hey, I like this. I'm going to do this, which is great.
Yeah, and to go out there and fund it, produce it, record it, play all the instruments, do all of it yourself, promote it. Pretty cool. Pretty ballsy. Mm-hmm. Good on you, Kyle. I think it's a fine, fine job.
100%, man.
Let's keep on trucking. We got our final one here. Stevie Wonder. This is Stevie's 15th studio album. Came out in October of 1972 on Tamla. Can you believe that? 72, this is his 15th album, dude.
It's, dude was just, I mean, prolific is almost an understatement.
I had no idea he had that much in his catalog.
Yeah, I mean, even when you factor in, it's like, okay, he started out with like the gospel stuff, like Little Stevie Wonder and like the soul stuff. But I mean, I don't think about it as being so far removed from like Talking Book that it's 15 albums between Gospel Stevie and this.
Right. So we've already done my other Stevie Wonder album. Let's talk about Talking Book here. What are your thoughts compared to the other one, or just as a standalone here?
I mean, Songs in the Key of Life, I think, is a phenomenal essential album. I think this is a really big time album still. Really good stuff on it. Not as long, thank goodness. But yeah, still dang good. Like, man, he killed it in the 70s.
So I think, yeah, I'm with you. I think, like, creatively, this is a step towards Songs in the Key of Life. Like, he's kind of breaking away like from Motown and Berry Gordy in particular, and getting a little bit more doing his own stuff.
Dude, yeah, real experimental stuff on here.
For sure. So let's dive into it. What do you got? What's standing out?
So I'm not wild about the first track, and I swear the opening piano sounds like Ride Captain Ride. But
upon your mystery ship.
What a good song.
That's a great song. Blues Image, baby. All day.
Like, it's a neat, groovy enough track, but I'll tell you where things really started getting going was Maybe Your Baby. Dude, that is my song of the week.
That is funky. Funky as heck. Stevie on the clavinet, the Hohner clavinet. Got the Moog bass in there. Do you know who plays the guitar on that song? Do you have any guesses?
Was this recorded in Netherlands by chance?
No, it's not Joe Walls.
I have no idea.
We've got Ray Parker Jr. on the guitar. The same Ray Parker Jr. who came up with the Ghostbusters theme song.
What?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Who are you going to call? Ray Parker.
I had no idea he had such a lengthy career prior.
Dude, me neither. But he's playing guitar on this bad boy, and he kind of rips it up.
Okay. That's impressive, man. Yeah, it was just 7 minutes of pure bizarre gold, like weirdo vocal effects going on at times, like really solid guitar. Mm-hmm. Man. Yeah. Dude, that Moog, so freaking good. What a great song.
Seriously. And this is another one that sounded fantastic on my speakers. The clavinet is such a cool instrument that just adds just that little bit of funk to this whole album. It's the clavinet is all over this album. But man, it's funky as hell.
Yeah. What else do you have?
You and I, We Can Conquer the World. A little solo there. That's been covered by all kinds of people. I didn't realize there's a Joe Cocker cover of that one that I'd like to hear. obviously. But then you've also got like Mariah Carey version of it, a Michael Bublé version. There's all kinds of people doing that.
Okay.
I don't have a ton of specific notes. I would just say both of these last two songs, Tuesday Heartbreak and You've Got It Bad Girl, real damn good.
Oh my God, dude. I love Tuesday Heartbreak. That was almost a song of the week. Got me dancing. The horns were awesome. Threw some claps in. Like, it's sweet, but it had some energy and sunshine to it, like a party track.
There was just an electricity about it. Just a very electric sounding song.
Mm-hmm. I would have loved to have been in the studio.
Yeah. And actually the next one too was very, you've got a Bad Girl. Got some cool backup singers, but Stevie's playing Fender Rhodes, the drums, the Moog bass, a synth. He's doing the lead vocals, backup vocals. Another dude who's just all over his own album, but man, what a cool song.
Yeah, for sure. And then you flip the record and it just kicks it up to the next level, next gear. Mm.
One thing I gotta say, so Superstition, great song, probably should have been my song of the week. I love this tune. But two fellas, Trevor Lawrence and Steve Madaio? M-A-D-A-I-O. Trevor on the sax, Steve on the trumpet. They really pump Superstition up. Just give me a little horns.
Man, I have kind of a very similar note. Like, the opening percussion just kind of starts strolling in. And like, you know something incredible's coming. Then that guitar hits you in the face. And then the horns start sneaking in. Like, just an insane amount of really good horns. Just incredible songwriting and pacing on that thing.
And that clavinet. Bow, 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 bow. Like, just funking out back there, dude.
Oh, man.
So, Jeff Beck played guitar on that song.
What?
Yes.
Dude, these are all connected this week. This is nuts.
So,
except for Kyle, but
so he was kind of an admirer of Stevie Wonder's music. Stevie found out and said, "Hey, come play on this album." And they kind of put this together at that time. In fact, Jeff was going to put out his own version of this song first. That was part of the agreement because he wrote most of it. And then because of some issues with Jeff Beck's band at the time and his label, and because Berry Gordy knew this was going to be a massive hit, he talked Stevie into getting it out first, and obviously it was a massive hit.
I wonder how Jeff Beck felt about that.
I don't know. I'm a little curious about that myself.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping he was just like, you know what? You deserve to put it out first. You're right. This is the version that should be out first.
I mean, it's very collaborative from what I understood when I was reading about it. Beck came up with the opening drum beat. They kind of improvised over the top of it from there. So I'm sure it was very collaborative.
Nice. Okay.
I also feel like if the agreement is Jeff Beck gets to put a version out first and that doesn't happen, I feel like that doesn't happen without Jeff Beck saying, okay, yeah, it's okay. I can't get my shit together over here. Go ahead and put it out.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Yeah. I like our world building, our fan fiction.
All right. What do you got on the B-side?
Big Brother, actually. I almost skipped over that one. It's really minimalist. Sets a nice tone after those like three rippers in a row. Going after politicians and those who abuse and abuse their base. Love that one. And I really like the album closer.
Great one to go out on. Mm-hmm. I don't have a ton of notes. Oh, other than Looking for Another Pure Love, Jeff Beck's on guitar on that one too. Let's see. What was the one that you said? Oh, I Believe. Yes. Some great. The Moog bass line on that one is huge. Huge.
It's kind of starts like an ominous crawl, and then I don't know. It's more rock than slow jam, and the final minute and a half it's just really beautiful.
It's a great one to go out on. Absolutely. Yeah.
I like how we almost bookended with some Jeff Beck.
All right, my dude. Final thoughts here on Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, man. I can totally see what you mean by it. Like, he was working towards Songs in the Key of Life on this, because it's got some really dang high highs.
Agree totally, especially that A side. It's just an absolute monster.
Yeah.
I gifted Dan Fogelberg the song of the week, being honest here. I mean, both the entire A side of Talking Book was probably my song of the week. But anyway, let's move on. What's your didn't see that coming question for me, or would you like me to go first? I've got mine all ready to go.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So, putting your name on something like these folks have, be it a piece of art, a building, you know, what have you, putting your name on something is sort of like creating a little time capsule, especially as something as kind of permanent as music, at least in our era. Once something is digitized on a mass scale, it's kind of hard to lose it. So with that in mind, my question is this. Obviously, our episodes are digitized. They're online currently. Mm-hmm. But let's say you had to create a time capsule with only 5 items. Be they albums, episodes, particular songs, conversations, 5 things to represent this podcast that you want to put in a time capsule. What are you choosing?
Oh man, this is such a good, that's such a good question. Okay. The New Wave British Heavy Metal episode, I feel like, was the one that I was just so excited about and like had so much fun. Like, I've really enjoyed all of these. But that one, I feel like, just purely encapsulates like my pure love of music. So I'm putting that one in there. I'm putting in Dixie Dregs. Dregs of the Earth, for sure. Just because of how shocking and how it completely changed. Yeah, it was just so unexpected. I'm putting in Talk About Grateful Dead because I want to really confuse people to be like, wait mm-hmm. a second. He was just listening to heavy metal. Why are they talking about the Grateful Dead now?
We also don't do a single Grateful Dead album on this entire podcast. So yeah. We talk about them constantly.
They've gotten a lot of lip service for 0 albums. I'm going to put in Bat Out of Hell.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really enjoyed our conversation on that. And it's an album that has meant a lot to me over the years. And I know every single word of it. And let me tell you, dude, I'm going to go collaborative. Pull these across all the episodes we've talked about. I'm putting every Chicago in there. And our reactions, our discussions. And those horns, baby.
Mm. I think that's a great cross-section of this podcast. I think you chose well. In fact, I probably would have had a lot of similar ones.
Okay. Okay. Do you have any thoughts? Or did you didn't think
about it? I was trying to get out of it. No, I mean, the episode, I think my favorite episode is the one that with the Dixie Dregs, the one where we just listen to albums that I bought purely based on the album cover. I think that's hilarious.
Yeah, where we had 0 idea what was in store. And
it was a great week, too. We got a Dixie really Dregs. We got Kirith Ungol, Sabotage was also that week. So pretty fun.
Yeah, dude.
So that's definitely Ambrosia. One of them.
No, Ambrosia was the next week. Well, oh, it's just those 3 and then a couple of others, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, some weird ones.
Oh, man.
I would probably put the first Saxon album in there, Denim and Leather, that we talked about, because that one was such... I already put a full episode, so I'm going to put the full New Wave of British Heavy Metal in there. So if I'm picking one thing from that week that really encapsulated my fun and how much I love that week, that would be that album.
Nice.
I like Jerry Garcia popping up everywhere.
Yeah, too.
So we'll put him in there. Let's see. I'm trying to think, man. I like all the Chicagos. I like that. Whichever Rush album you liked the most, I would put in there, because talking to someone who is coming around to Rush, maybe seeing a little bit of the side of Rush that Rush fans see, where you hadn't seen it before, was really fun. So I'd probably put that in there too.
Yeah, yeah, that'd probably be Permanent Waves, I think, was.
Yes. Really, yeah. There you go. I just listened to that the other day when I was painting a crib. It's still great.
So, like, I really like 2112, but Permanent Waves, I was like, boom, this is where it hit.
This is good. All right. Cool. Did I get five? I may have only done four.
You got four, but.
Then I'm putting my Dixie Dregs t-shirt that I just bought in there.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
As well.
That thing is sick.
I know.
You know, I was thinking about the Grateful Dead stuff. And I don't think we really started talking about it until Tarkio Road. And that was like episode 20-something. And we were like, dang, maybe we like the Grateful Dead. And sure enough.
Tarkio Road. Brewer and Shipley. That was kind of a little bit of a hidden gem, I thought.
Dude, I yeah, for sure. That thing was... that one blew my mind. If we do a recap episode and talk about hidden gems and surprises, that one's definitely going to pop up.
I love it. All right. What do you got for me?
Well, first off, when you were talking about names on buildings and stuff like that, it made me think in high school, a couple of buddies and I, we were like, one day if we have enough money, let's go together and buy a billboard for a city that's like, welcome to blank, and put our faces on it, and nobody has any idea who we are.
I love it.
I wonder if they'd remember that. But
did that ever come to fruition? I really hope it did.
It's something that I think about way too often. Man, I'd love to do it. Just like some nowhere city in like Nebraska or something.
I'd pitch in for that. I'd throw a little money on that.
Just us like smiling and waving.
Jay and Joey welcome you to Mullen, Nebraska.
Yeah, Umaclaw, Washington.
Perfect.
Sidetracked is there. Jay, if you were to attempt something full-blown solo, a feat, something artistic, etc., what would it be, and how would you document your solo journey?
I would like to... And a bunch of people just did it. I wouldn't be able to do it as fast as they did, but I would like to hike the Triple Crown. I know I've mentioned this before, but the three big trails in the United States, the Appalachian Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, and the Pacific Crest Trail. I'd like to do all three of those. And as far as documenting it, I think it would be hardest to do it this way, but I still think I would be better at doing it this way. I would probably write it down. I would write a book just because I think that I would be better in that medium, maybe for that particular task. Keep a journal.
Yeah, that's really great. I mean, heck, I'd read that. Like the especially when you start losing it after 55 days alone.
Yeah.
what kind of thoughts are coming out at that point?
Stuff happens on the trails, man, that it's just interesting. I mean, I did, what did I do, 5 days on the Appalachian Trail one time. We got lost at one point, and we got a ride from some kids, like high school age kids.
Okay.
And we got in their car. There was no stereo. We then got to realize that they were all wearing, like, you know, kind of long hoop skirts and like overalls, and we're like, oh, these folks are, I don't know, that we were in Pennsylvania, the Amish Mennonite, what have you, I don't know all the ins and out, but you know, they don't have a radio because they're not allowed to listen to music, which we thought that was interesting.
That is so freaking random.
Yeah, it took us, and what's even funnier is I had I was carrying a mandolin with me at the time, and they were really interested in that. They were like, what is that? Like, it's a mandolin. So just little things like that, you know, that was in a five-day span. So think about that extrapolated over months and months and months.
Yeah.
That could be really cool.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Yeah, I would absolutely read that.
How about you? What are you doing?
Yeah, just like the little incidents in life that kind of are so fleeting but so memorable at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it rained all day. And we felt like absolute shit. And these kids were like, yeah, the actual campground's 2 miles up the road. You want to ride? And we were like, hell yes.
Yes.
Let's all climb in your giant police surplus Crown Victoria and take us to the campground, please. And they did.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, I think my thing would be I would love to either do the land journey from like Singapore all the way up across Asia through Europe and then end in a boat ride to England. And I'd probably film photography it. Or I would want to do the land journey from like the tip of Alaska all the way down to the tip of South America. Yeah.
Dude, is that our next podcast?
Because oh my God. If we could find sponsors.
The Pan American Highway is what that's called, and I would absolutely love to do it on like kind of a crossover motorcycle with one that's kind of off-road on-road motorcycles.
Sure, yeah.
That would be an absolute blast, I think.
Yeah, man, I could ride in the sad car.
That'd be hilarious. I'd love it.
I'm telling you which one I would love to have for the next podcast. I need to figure out a way to pitch this to them, but a National Parks podcast, man. It's so overdue. I can't believe that. Yeah. We can dream. And if you're happy that we're a duo and not solo, then subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, write a review, tell others about us. Find our Spotify playlist through the link in the show notes. And as always, be good to each other.
I'm on a roll. It's time to go solo. Roll it.